Hi, I'm Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, and I'm here with a spoiler special podcast on Eat, Pray, Love, Ryan Murphy's adaptation of the monster Elizabeth Gilbert bestseller. Here with me in the New York studios are Lindsay Robertson. Hey, Lindsay.
Hi, Dana.
Who is, what's your bio? You're a freelance writer. You write for Jezebel. You write for New York Magazine.
Yeah, lots of different places.
Anything else you want to, place you want to send people to?
Not offhand. My Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You have a great Twitter feed, which people should follow, as does my other guest, Lizzie Skernick. Hi, Lizzie.
Hi. I didn't even think of mentioning my Twitter. I have a great Twitter
Yeah, that's now a resume item for writers. It's very funny. But okay, so Lizzie, you are?
I am also a freelance writer and critic, and I write a lot for Politics Daily and The Daily Beast.
And since ladyism is often your beat, you guys, both of you, were the perfect people to have come in to talk about Eat, Pray, Love. It was really fun seeing it with you last night and not talking about it afterwards because we decided we would save all our fire for the spoiler special. So I know very little about your reactions to the movie. Although I will say there was a moment that I noticed that there were sniffles on either side of me. And I was sitting in the middle completely unmoved. But okay, we'll get to that.
You were told not to mention it.
I just want to point out, I'm the one who kept us from talking about it. You guys would have spoiled the spoiler special.
That's true. You laid down the law. So now you've got to bring all your energy to the table here. So what did you guys think overall? And also I want to hear briefly whether or not you've read the book and how you think it stacks up to the book.
Well, I've read the book. I read it originally, and I reread it for this the day before, and I brought it to the movie so that I could fact check it during the movie. I mean, it's interesting. I felt like this was definitely one of those movies where you need the book as a companion. I mean, I have no idea what people would think of this movie had they not read the book, because I think it's sort of an attenuated version of the book. And I know what people usually say about the book is, I love the Italian part, and then I couldn't read any more of it once they went to India and Bali. It made no sense to me. And I actually think in the movie that comes out more. Like, by the time she comes to Bali, you really are like, why is she in Bali talking to this old man? I don't understand. But yeah.
I started the book when it first came out, but it annoyed me too much.
How far did you make it through?
I'm not sure. Not too far. Probably about 30 pages or so. And then I just put it down because it was just really annoying me, just even having it in my house. So I think I gave it to someone. And, you know, just it's sort of being culturally everywhere, I had to be contrarian and not, you know, read it. But
well, it was pressed on me by a friend. I mean, a friend literally, I refused to read it. And a friend, as I was leaving Baltimore on my way to New Jersey on a train, said, here's this book. I got it for you. Go read it. So,
well, here's what I will say about the book. I expected to have the experience Lindsay did, because I do find the narrator, Elizabeth Gilbert, incredibly irritating. But she has a skill. She has a kind of diabolical skill, actually. And I also had it pressed on me by someone, started reading it, thought, this is way too self-helpy. This is not my kind of thing. And the next thing I knew, I was done with it. I mean,
yeah.
It's unlike, for example, the Stieg Larsson books, the woman can actually write.
Right.
She can turn a phrase. What the book is trying to do, to me, is somewhat reprehensible, but I think she does it very, very well. And what the book is trying to do, we should say, for those who don't know this phenomenon, is chronicle this year-long journey that this woman takes because of a book contract, which is completely glossed over in both the book and the movie, right?
It's not even mentioned.
It's mentioned in both places, but very, very briefly, and as if it's sort of an extra, you know, that it's not the reason that she's taking the journey, but sort of like an extra nice thing that happened,
right,
or something, right? I mean, the whole raison d'etre of this journey is that she gets a book contract, in which there's no shame in that. I don't quite understand why it has to be glossed over in order for her voyage to have any meaning. But it seems like in both the book and the movie that does happen.
Well, you know, but my thing about Elizabeth Gilbert, which is also what my review is about, but since it's written, I can talk about it, is just that she glosses over everything. You know, my big reaction to Committed was that it's supposedly about her deciding to be married.
This is her new book,
This is her new book. And there's literally nothing about the marriage. I mean, I think there's 5 pages spent on the actual marriage. And it's the same thing with this book. There's quite a lot of sort of daily exposition and quite a lot of, you know, I was thinking this meditation in my head, but all of the actual stuff, she's always like, well, I can't talk about the divorce. You know, I can't really talk about why David and I broke up. I can't talk about why I broke up with my husband. You know, I can't talk about why I took this book tour. So it's sort of like, so you actually can't talk about any of the mechanics of why any of this is happening.
Which in the movie, at least, I mean, in the book, because she's a good storyteller and she just spins a good anecdote, you can sort of let some of that stuff go. But I agree with you, Lizzie, that the movie would seem really, really unmotivated if you hadn't read the book. You essentially just have to take it on faith that she hits rock bottom because she tells everyone that she's hitting rock bottom, right? But the characters are sketched so hastily at the beginning that you don't quite understand why, although her marriage to Billy Crudup has fallen apart, and then she jumps into this relationship with James Franco, which also falls apart for reasons we don't understand. Then she gets the book contract in a very hasty scene with her editor, friend, publisher, played by Viola Davis.
Right.
And the next thing we know, she's going on this three-part journey, right? It's supposed to be 4 months in India. I mean, sorry, 4 months in Italy, Rome. 4 months in India at this ashram, and then 4 months in Bali.
Right.
And as you say, Lizzie, we're not quite sure, except for the fact that, you know, she wants to eat, pray, and love, exactly why she's embarking on this journey. But there she is.
Well, I found it interesting how the movie, because there's that absence, because we don't actually know the narrative impetus, the movie frames it all as romance. You know, it's all sort of like the first anecdote is the romantic anecdote. It's like how even Cambodian boat people being eaten by sharks really just care about whether a guy is going to call them, you know. And then it's sort of like, my marriage didn't work out, my boyfriend didn't work out, so I have to go find myself and find romance, you know. And then at the end, I go off with this man.
Which
on
is less true of the book, even though all those same events happen in the book. It doesn't feel like it's a book about boy trouble. And the movie does.
Right. And then there's, you know, every other second, there's that thing of like, Liz, you need a man, Liz, you need a man, which is not, I mean, it's in the book, but it's not in the book as sort of a trope that, you know, Liz is then going to get a man.
Well, I want to hear what you guys think of the ending. I mean, first I want to talk through some of the earlier stuff, but since we can spoil here, it's a spoiler special, I want to hear what you think of how the movie equivocates with that, you know, are we allowed to have a happy man-related ending or not, right? I mean, is it going to somehow undermine her voyage of self-discovery if she actually has a happy ending with a man?
Well, I knew this story, so I knew exactly what was going to happen. I think everybody sort of, you know, eat, pray, love. I mean, it was very funny that at the end I was like, oh, and then they lived happily ever after and never thought
about anything
again.
Well, it literally, spoiler alert, was a voyage to the sunset. The last shot of the movie is them on a boat, her and Javier Bardem, who plays the Brazilian that she falls in love with in Bali.
And it's
just
like she's
taking off into the sunset with, I think, Bossa Nova playing in the background.
And she's, like, done with her emotional growth and her journey. And
yeah,
it's
check.
Just, it's all
emotional growth, check.
Totally.
Yeah, everything will just figure itself out from now on.
Which literally in the book she says, can I open and do the quote from the book? Because she actually, I have it turned down the page. Okay, she says in the book, yet what keeps me from dissolving right now, and this is at that moment, into a complete fairy tale shimmer is this solid truth, a truth which has veritably built my bones over the last few years, M-. I was not rescued by a prince. I was the administrator of my own rescue. So she in
is that the last sentence of the book?
No,
that would be a really lackluster last
sentence.
Administrator,
know, weird.
Pray, love,
a lot
administrate.
About that sentence is kind of weird. No, the last sentence is "Let's cross over," which is the same.
Right, yeah. That's the last line of the movie too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we still haven't had just an emotional, visceral reaction to the movie. I mean, I have to say, I am not a hater of the book. As I say, I find it fun to read, although I sort of resent its manipulative power over me. But I am not a fan of this movie. I really didn't think it worked. I mean, even having read the book and coming with a tiny amount of goodwill to it, I couldn't get into it. And I really think it would be just dull and kind of conflict-free if you hadn't ever read the story. Stakes are so low.
The stakes are totally low. But what I sort of liked about the movie exists on this nonsensical meta level, which is that I felt like Julia Roberts took this book so seriously and felt so strongly that this was like a real love project on her part, and she was so into it. And I feel like there was some of the best acting of her career.
She is really good. She's like, perfectly cast in this role.
She's really good. Like when she cries in the bathroom and she does panicked crying, I was like, oh my God, I'm kind of panicked now.
I was like, we haven't seen that since Shelby in the beauty shop in Steel Magnolias. We have not seen that Julia. It was amazing.
It was like,
is she going for an Oscar here?
Totally. She was totally going for the Oscar, and I would have given it to her because she moved me more in the bathroom crying, weeping scene and in the wedding scene, which we have to talk about later, than, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert in the book really plays that scene for laughs, the bathroom scene, like at one point.
Which we should say the bathroom scene is sort of the rock bottom at the beginning. It's the
rock
moment
bottom.
She starts praying to God out of the blue, although she's been a totally secular person her whole life.
Totally. And she says she does that. She says, I started praying, like, to God, you know, and she also calls her tears on the floor. She says, if you will, a veritable lake inferior. Like, she does all this sort of stupid jokey.
She likes that word veritable.
I know. She did. Which is, tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth is also, you know, there's like weird sort of
sublimated
tropes of like veritable truth, you know, which sort of tie into the theory of how she doesn't tell us the important truths.
Well, she's a very calculating truth teller, but I mean, we keep getting off into the book. I want to hear like what the movie does with all of this. Okay, so since we were talking about boy trouble, let's ask the man question. This was the thing I wanted to ask you guys coming out, and Lizzie refused to let me ask it. So, can you guys walk me through the man roster of this movie? Because I completely don't get the valence of the different men. There's Billy Crudup, who's the husband she breaks up with. There's James Franco, the boyfriend that she then leaves before the trip, and then her only real romantic intrigue on the trip, although every man who meets her seems completely besotted by her, is the Javier Bardem Brazilian guy.
Yes.
So to me, all
and
of these men... Oh, yeah, yeah. And then there's a...
dancing Australian.
There's a dancing naked Australian that she could hook up with, but she decides to be chaste in that scene. So I don't get why she discards or takes on any of these men, because they're all such, to me, portrayed as such generic romance fantasy novel heroes that they would all seem perfectly fine. They all...
Well, her husband...
are handsome.
Seems like,
they're all charming. They all are crazy about her.
It seems like she leaves him because he wants to go back to graduate school. And, like, later they kind of explain that away as, like, oh, he just always has ideas and doesn't follow up on them. And it's like... Well, everybody does that. That's not a reason to leave the guy.
It was extremely vague. I almost wondered if there might not be legal troubles with the publisher and the husband or something where she wasn't allowed to sketch any specific reason because...
There's totally legal troubles. She was totally not allowed to write about him in the book. And his book was just canceled because... So that divorce thing, I mean, there is actually a real reason why she doesn't write that much about the divorce. But she also doesn't say... Sorry, I can't write about the divorce because of legal things, which would be better. But I thought, I don't know, I hated the husband. Like, the husband to me seemed very clearly to be someone, you know, he was being supported by her, and he clearly was just sort of like Mr. Fritter-away projects, you know.
Yeah.
And then actor dude, and I have to say just that because I know the real actor dude in real life, so I'm a little bit prejudiced because I know the real David, but that actor dude seems to, he wants distance. That's the problem. And in the book, we get more about how needy she is, but there's that part where he turns over and says, why don't you let me miss you? So I think we're meant to understand that she was being needy, needy, needy on him.
Yeah.
And then... Javier, I don't know, he's bringing her hangover drinks. You know, he says he loves her. There's no conflict on his end. So I think it's kind of like, why not?
There is an interesting moment with Javier toward the end where you think for a moment that the movie's going to end on this note of her actually saying, I choose me, like Ali Sheedy at the end of St. Elmo's Fire. Remember? Because he wants her to get on this boat with him. And there's this moment, it was one of the few moments in the entire movie that I actually identified with, like, I have had that emotion. In general, all the emotions, including the moments that you guys were sniffly, seem really synthetic to me. And I'm an easy mark for crying in movies, too, let me just note. But she and Javier Bardem have just been having this like 2-week-long idyll that's like kind of too intense and smothering, and she's trying to get away from him, but she loves him too. And then there's this moment that he says, get on this boat with me, out of the blue, like no preparation, no time to pack the suitcase. And I completely identified, like, wait. And she said, I hadn't been home for 5 days. I mean, who hasn't had that moment? Like, I haven't been home for 5 days, right? Just imagine, like, you're washing out your one pair of underwear in Javier Bardem's sink, and like all your stuff is back at your apartment. Of course, you don't want to get on the boat. It feels completely rushed and smothering.
Yeah.
And she refuses to get on. And I thought that that was a moment that the movie was actually going to say, you know, back off, guys. Like, I'm just going to be on my own here. But in fact, she does end up sailing into the sunset on that very boat with him like a day later.
Well, what does he say to her? He says something that's not in the book. I love how everything about this for me is like, what's in the book? What's not in the book? But he says, like, okay, run from me, but if you run now, you won't change or something. What does he say to get her to turn around? Does anyone remember? It was something where because that seemed like actually a genuine line, because I was a little bit like, how is he going to get her to stay? Because I did identify with that also, where it would kind of freak me out. Like, what do you mean get on a boat?
Well, this I think is a flaw in the scripting of the movie. It's not the performances. It's actually just the fact that we don't have enough density. There's not enough texture in that relationship for us to know that there could be two contradictory feelings.
Right.
Well,
right?
We know,
I mean,
they
all
had
the men are just these guys on steeds. Right. I mean,
constantly.
Just, right.
Yeah.
And
so,
she gets cystitis because of it, which was another classic
touch. Oh, that was
touch.
Funny. Yeah.
But yeah, all the guys are such kind of gentlemen that I don't sense anything real happening between them.
Well, I think maybe that's part of where when they made the movie from the book, they were just, you know, they were a little hamstrung, because it's sort of like, you know, how much can you sketch a, you know, conflict that's not really written up in the book? You know, we really don't know what's going on in the relationship. So I feel like that was just sort of, you know, actually that the movie makers were trying to distill any one fact that they could find, you know, like this guy's distant, this guy can't hold a job, this guy's ready for love, and like mm-hmm. just sort of go with that.
And even his son, his adult
totally
son is like,
son.
Dad, you're ready, it's been 10 years or, you know,
which
whatever.
Is gross.
he existed just to say that, basically.
Right, to be like, Dad, have sex.
Another thing was sort of, this is sort of supposed to be this sort of anti-Sex in the City type movie, and but they still had to get in like the consumerism aspect. There's a part in the movie where she sees a slip in a store window, like an expensive lingerie, and she doesn't have anybody to wear it for or whatever, and then the next day you see her, she's wearing the slip, and it's like, oh, she bought it, but she bought it for her, not for a guy. And it's like, that's supposed to be sort of a victory when it's like she's supposed to be on this spiritual journey. And she's also already complained about being, you know, running out of money and stuff like that. And it's just like, don't buy things. This isn't that movie. Like, they have to throw that in. So I don't know. I mean, maybe that's supposed to show that, you know, later on she becomes less into, like, I don't think we see the slip again. But
well, I do think the whole time there is this sort of thing where she refuses to resolve the question of desire versus deprivation. You know, it's like the same as what happens at the ashram where she's all like, I want to be the silent girl, you yeah. know, and she's like, okay, I should try to be the silent girl.
I love that. I am in silence pins.
I am in silence.
They should sell those as a tie-in with the movie.
They are selling, you know, on the Home Shopping Network, there's a bunch of tie-in products.
Yeah. Like, the
awesome
only thing
one.
I would get would be the I am in silence
I would
pin.
Totally
I
get
just
that.
Want to wear that in New York, you know, like, no, sorry.
But then after she is in silence, then they're like, you have to be the Susie Cream Cheese. You have to be the tour director. And she's like, oh, great. So this is what God really wanted, was for me to be myself. And with everything, it's like that. And I think that's one of the reasons why the character is irritating, you know, either in the book or the movie, because it's sort of like, I wanted to do this, but then God said that, so it's all great. Like, it's very, like, evangelical.
Well, it's like
basically.
The universe exists to ratify the behavior of Elizabeth Gilbert.
Exactly. Seriously. I did like when they made her do chores, though.
The scrubbing of the floor.
That was, yeah.
What did
was, like,
you guys
good.
Think of the Richard Jenkins character? We should explain. Lizzie, you're the plot detailer here, because you just reread the book.
The Richard Jenkins character is, what's his actual name? He's some
Richard from Texas.
Yeah. Oh, right. And he really is Richard, which she makes clear in the book. And, you know, in the movie, Richard, we find out later, has almost killed his son and is an alcoholic. And
he's a guy at the ashram.
He's the
say.
Guy at the ashram trying to forgive himself for the fact that he's almost lost his family.
Now, that whole story that Richard Jenkins tells is not in the book,
it is
right?
Not
Richard
in the
Jenkins
book at
goes
all.
On this extended,
so
weepy
weird.
Story about his son. And I know that oh. Lindsay didn't like this. I didn't like it at all either.
Okay.
It's a fake-out story.
It's a total fake-out. He tells this story, and, like, there's the soaring music, and we know we're supposed to cry, and he's like, I came home drunk one night and I didn't see my 8-year-old son was right there. And she's like, you see Julia, like, sort of from the back, but you could see her digesting it. And it's like, oh my God, he killed his son. And, like, there's this long pause and he's like, he got out of the way, but his mother saw what happened and left me. And so the son is fine. Like, we just were about to, like, cry over that, and he's totally fine. It was ridiculous.
And no one would tell the story in that way, right? They'd say, like, no, he didn't die or anything.
Yeah.
They'd say that right away.
They would start with it. Yeah.
Totally.
I had a near miss.
But I wanted to know what you guys thought of the Richard Jenkins, Julia Roberts relationship in the ashram, both in the book and in the movie, but particularly, again, in the movie because it's less well-written. That relationship just rang completely untrue to me. And I think both of them were great in their parts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the idea of her hooking up with this kind of, you know, straight-talking Texan in the ashram is kind of
who calls her
fine.
Groceries.
But, yeah, like, that nickname just yeah. really, really grates on me. Yeah. I do not for a minute believe that was her actual
me
nickname.
Me neither, yeah.
Oh, and not to mention the fact that he's in practically the first sentence he says to her, he gives her this affectionate nickname, Groceries, because she puts away so much food at
it's
the ashram.
It's like they're in prison together, like a prison movie. It's like,
it is,
you know,
like that.
Like, she's preacher man or college girl or something.
I just felt like that was one of the moments that Elizabeth Gilbert was the most guilty of sort of sprinkling fairy dust on herself, you
right.
know, in their relationship with Richard. And it really bothered
me. Like, there were so many other people there, and it's like he zeroes in on her and gives her a nickname because she's special.
Well, that's also probably, though, he is the most like the character she wrote about in her past, you know, in her past life as an actual real writer, you know, in Stern Men and Pilgrims. I mean, he's mm-hmm. that sort of quirky
person. Oh, I don't
know
her earlier writing. She liked to investigate down and out stories.
It's sort of quirky, weird people. Like The Last Man in America is about this man that lives completely off the land, you know. And it's a really great, interesting book. And it's like her sort of what I call her actual writing career is like totally not ever a factor. But I think that's why Richard was there, because it's like, honestly, with this book, the part in the ashram is really boring. I mean, what can you write about an ashram? You know, you write about your internal, like you write a few funny things about your internal meditation.
But even more boring, what can you film about an ashram? Because
exactly.
You don't even have language to expound what's going on in her inner revelations or whatever. It's literally just Julia Roberts sitting there in a peasant shirt, cross-legged.
Well, that's why they had to add in that wedding, the Indian wedding of the girl, which does not exist in the book, and also the wedding scene on the roof. I mean, all of that stuff about this also being about love in that ashram is, and the call from what's-his-face, the call from James Franco, none of that is in the book at all. And I really think they had to use it to make it part of this larger love story.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to talk about the Billy Crudup flashback, which was the scene that you guys were sniffling in.
You keep betraying us, Dana.
No shame in it. I wish that scene had moved me, but I want to know why it moved you.
Well, you know, it moved me because I was identifying, even though I'm totally unmarried, but it seemed, first of all, so sad that at their actual wedding, instead of using their real song, we see this in a flashback, Billy Crudup does sort of a joke and plays Celebration instead and sort of dances around her, you know, performs around her, which is supposed to be funny, but you can also think if you were the bride, that would be so horrible, actually, to have, you know, it sort of bespeaks this distance in your relationship that your groom has made your first dance a joke, you know, even though it's called Celebration.
And wow, but you just explicated that so much more smartly and movingly than the movie did. The movie didn't let us know at all how she felt about the Celebration switch-up.
I was just crying because I cry whenever there's a breakup or somebody remembering a long-lost love. Like, that always gets me.
And Harvest. I mean, Harvest Moon. Come on. That song.
Right, then yeah. Their real wedding song comes on, their first dance, and it's Neil Young's Harvest Moon.
Yeah. And it was that for me, too. It's like you bring up an old ghost and, you know, put them in a different place and make them dance. And that was very moving because you do sort of feel like there's been a lot about forgiveness in that scene. You know, the forgiveness for almost killing your 8-year-old kid and then the forgiveness for the husband. And I thought the idea of doing it, I'm like almost going to cry now. How sad is that? I thought the idea of doing it through this like wedding dance at dusk, you know, to Neil Young was actually kind of nice because it's actually a genuinely quirky, weird thing to do. Unlike, you know, all the dopey spiritual stuff like the touching of the runaway elephant.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that was the very end of the India part, right?
Yeah.
An elephant just comes wandering onto the grounds. And you don't even know if
special.
It's in a fantasy or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, even the elephant is singling her out. See, the universe loves Elizabeth Gilbert.
Well, it does, though.
But speaking, of forgiveness, this is the last thing I wanted to close on, is do you guys think that the book – well, okay, the book has this massive following, right? It was, I think, an Oprah book, and it was a huge international bestseller. Do you think that the book's many fans will forgive this movie for its obvious shortcomings? I mean, it clearly is – let's just stipulate that we like the book and respect the book, which I'm not sure I do, right? But it's an inferior version of the book. So, but are people going to love it nonetheless because it just reminds them of the book they loved and it's got Julia Roberts in it?
Well, I think the book itself is already sort of a simulacrum of what it's supposed to be. So I think the movie is just part of the franchise. Like, I think, you know, I think they would buy anything. They would go on the Elizabeth Gilbert tour. They would wear the Elizabeth Gilbert devotional.
Also, like, we're in, you know, with the economy the way it is, this is the only way that a lot of people, myself included, can travel.
Which is another reason the Rome part was the best. It's like, I want to go to Rome more than this
Rome
other two places.
Rome is awesome.
We never got to see India, really. We just know the inside of the ashram.
But yeah, I mean, it was like watching Planet Earth or something. It was like, it was transporting. And I was like, oh, look at the pretty scenery, you know? And look at Julia Roberts. I love her. Haven't seen her in a while. You know, I mean, I don't know. I like the movie better than I thought I would. Because I thought I would really hate it. But
I like them as a matched set. As a cultural critic, as a person, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I'm really glad to have seen both because I want to be able to have conversations like this about them. Well, thank you guys for seeing the movie with me and for coming in to talk about it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Our producer is Krishnan Vasudevan. The executive producer of Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.